The Diesel Podcast.
Developing innovation in English as a second or other language.
Episode 84. What the f*** should we do about teaching swearing?
Welcome to Diesel. This is episode 84. We are your hosts. I'm Brent Warner.
And I'm Michelle Reyes.
Hey.
Hi, Brent.
How you doing?
I got sick last week. Taiwan got me.
Taiwan got you.
I had the stomach flu, but I'm still eating all the things.
All right. So if you remember, we mentioned this on a previous show. You did get sick when you were in Japan as well.
And you charged through that episode.
We were recording live.
We were recording live. And while you were, I feel like we had an interview, a guest that day. And you were talking through something. I left to go puke.
Yeah.
I couldn't do that this time.
No.
So
you don't have the constitution that you had a year or so ago.
I am old.
You're feeling better now, though?
Yeah, feeling better, and I'm returning to the U.S. soon. And we have a lot of listeners in Taiwan, so shout out to my Taiwanese listeners, to our Taiwanese listeners.
Yeah, very cool. So, hi, everybody. Ni hao, and is that? Yeah, all the basics. Is that right? I took a year of Chinese when I was in college. I should definitely know that ni hao is right.
I mean, I only took a 4-month course, and that's about all I remember.
Yeah. It's hard. It's hard to hold all the languages in your head, right? Well, here we are. We made it to May. We're heading into finals around this time for our classes and wrapping things up. And so it's been busy. All this AI conversation too. I've been doing presentations.
It's overwhelming.
I've been doing so many presentations on it, which is good because a lot of people have a lot of questions. But on the other hand, I'm just like, oh man, I need to stop saying yes to all of these presentations. I like doing it in the moment, but then I'm like, oh man, I'm tired. So here we go. We are today talking about a little bit of a different topic, something we haven't talked about yet. So let's
dive in.
Let's
jump in.
Let's frickin' dive in.
So recently, one of my former students asked me a kind of a funny question, curious question, and he started asking me for particular curse words in Spanish or swear words in Spanish. And I asked him, well, why are you suddenly interested in Spanish? And he said his brother has learned all the curse words in English, and now he needs a new language to curse in. So he and I were talking about why is it that language learners are so drawn to learning the curse words in the target language? And also, should we, as teachers, we always tend to shy away from talking about those in class. And we decided that this was an interesting conversation. So here we are.
Yeah.
Here we are.
So, to be clear, Michelle, I did say go ahead and curse on the beginning because I can bleep it out, but I do not want to be searching for every time you curse throughout this episode tomorrow. So
I just said the letter F.
No, I'm all right. So we're going to have a heck of an episode today. Don't make me do tons of editing, please. That's my only request.
You already have to edit my name, so.
Oh my God, I know. Everybody out there listening, if you ever make a podcast that auto transcribes, don't get a co-host named Michelle, because the auto transcribe is I guess it's racist, right? Is that or it's biased towards Michelle or Shall or Hell? We've talked about this a little bit before, but
that's right.
Yeah. Yeah, all these crazy things that I find when I'm trying to replace your name in there. But
and Brent has to go in there and do it manually. So thank you, Brent. I will not curse and add more to your editing.
I'll curse the auto transcribe for not getting it right after all these years. All right. So, yeah, so this is, it's interesting. So your student was out there and wanting to learn how to curse in Spanish, right? And we do mm-hmm. know this, right? There's always kind of the common joke that like, oh, the very first things you start learning are bad words. And that might vary depending on your personality. There's actually a lot of research on this topic out there. You know, Shell, we found a couple of episodes through all, or sorry, a couple of
articles
through this, but there's actually like, this is a well-studied area, and I'm interested in knowing who the people who study and do this research are, if they're like heavy cursors and they just want to justify their work or whatever the reasons are. But regardless, I remember even years ago being at a CTESOL conference, and one of them was like one of the sessions was about using bad words. And so this is not a brand new topic in our field. It just doesn't get talked about very often, right? People just kind of assume, well, you're just going to not really talk about it. You're not going to teach your students bad words for all of these, you know, kind of the common reasons. I think, well, do you teach bad words in your classes?
I don't carve out a portion of my lessons to teach only bad words, mm-hmm. but inevitably something happens where you have to address what is proper and not proper. Or if someone uses a word they've seen they've heard in a movie and then they use it in the wrong context, or then you have to kind of pause and stop and explain to them, the functions of that word. Mm-hmm. And so then that leads into a bigger conversation, and inevitably there will be like a 20-minute discussion. And then I always tell my students, if you have any questions, you can ask me. I'm here. This is a language classroom. It's better for us to talk about it here than for you to make a mistake or not understand once you go to places where people expect you to be able to discern. And so I don't shy away from it. And I also let them know, when you use that word in my classroom, I feel it makes me feel extremely uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And so I often also have to teach that at the same time so that they know it. And because I personally don't curse often.
Yeah.
So it does make me feel uncomfortable. I curse more than I used to because I'm comfortable to a degree, like with the letter F and saying F. But yeah, what about you? Do you teach your students
kind of the same, I think. Mm-hmm. So I'm not the George Carlin seven bad words, but like when mm-hmm. the lighter curse words come up, and we have to talk about them for whatever reasons, I'll usually talk about them. But I'm a little, well, so number one, I think I'm a much more of a cursor than you are in mm-hmm. private life, right? Mm-hmm. I let it slip and I let it fly all the time. Although I'm able to control it better than some of my friends for sure. So with the class though, I am a little bit anxious around it, I guess. And I'm like, I don't really, mm-hmm. I don't want my students to think that I'm going out there and doing inappropriate things. And since some of my students are also adults and a little bit older, mm-hmm. they might be a little bit more sensitive to these than maybe the younger kids. But you know, things will come up like the half bad words like ass and the other day,
yeah.
the other day,
how is that a half bad word? When did it become a half bad word?
Is it a really bad word?
I don't know. When my students say it, it's like my ears like, ah,
yeah.
But then yeah. I use that word all the time. So it doesn't seem bad.
It's definitely like, I mean, there's like a scale for these words, right? Yeah. So that one's kind of like on the borderline, right? And then mm-hmm. you remember when you were kids and we had like all the safe words for all of these, right? So it's like fudge.
Crap.
And darn, and you know, like all of these things, right? And that's what you could safely get away with when you were a kid. Mm-hmm. But I also don't know if kids these days, modern kids, even censor themselves at all. So anyways, I kind of have mixed feelings about it. And the other day, mm-hmm. this is not a bad word, but boob came up because of boob tube. Mm-hmm. But I still even mm-hmm. felt a little bit uncomfortable with that because I'm like, oh, yeah. I got it. And I said the dumbest thing in class. I'm like, this is not. This is not boob, and I think I said like the sexy part or something dumb like that, like as if a boob just by itself is yeah. somehow sexy. So I apologize to whatever the word gods are out there. But anyways, I do get very, you know, in class, I get kind of sensitive and
we're like, choose a little bit more hyper aware. Mm-hmm. Right. But I also think, when I was studying French, I remember my French teacher told me, I am going to teach you the bad words because you're going to hear them and you're not going to know what they are. But when a French person tells you to mind your onions, and she said whatever that was in French, you need to know that it means they're very angry at you and you need to mind your own business. And so again, I just thought that was neat that she was not shying away from it. And she was just approaching the issue of cursing in another language and understanding the complexity of using those words and what the consequences for language learners who might be shy to ask about them or who might want to try their, you know, as they're developing the persona that they're going to use in that other language to play with the words. Because I know oftentimes my students will blurt out a word. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's the shiz. And it's like at a weird, awkward placing in the sentence. And it's like, oh, they're playing with the language. They're mm-hmm. playing with the language. Okay. Until that becomes part of their lexicon, it's going to sound awkward. And I tell them, I said, you sound so awkward. We know that that's the first time you've used it out loud. But you need to practice it, and you need to practice it in a safe environment. You also need to be aware that it could be offensive to people. So I do approach it from that angle, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I like that. I like what you said about your teacher, because, you know, mm-hmm. I think that her approach sounds better than my approach, because if she's just very straightforward and matter of fact about it, I actually think that there's a level of professionalism kind of tied together with that, right? As compared to my way of like trying to hem and haw around it until I really justify that I'm not really saying this, but I'm just kind of teaching, you know, like I do all this, like this song and dance and this pony show about like trying to justify why I'm actually talking about this, when really it should just be like, we need to know this. Like, here's what it is. Here's one aspect or one contextual element of this that we're going to talk about for right now. Maybe I'm not doing a whole class on it or anything like that, like you said, mm-hmm. but I do think that that is important. And there are a lot of reasons for these too. So I know we found a couple articles in here. One of these was Swearing in a Second Language, The Role of Emotions and Perceptions by Ariana Mohammadi. And Ishal, I know you found a couple of, or at least one or two quotes out of there, and I found a couple too that were interesting. So let's share a couple of the ideas that came out of there.
Yeah, for me, it was the quote that stood out, and I think it's why I feel that I need to address whenever it comes up not shy away from it, is that the article summarizes it quite well. Swearing can be offensive and a device for expression of negative emotions, but also in contrast, swearing may also occur in positive contexts to promote group bonding, to display identity, to express humor, solidarity, trust, and intimacy, or to simply function rhetorically and add emphasis to the message. The article also says that swearing may be used as a way of enacting dominance and exerting social power. And I think you and I have talked a little bit about that. And then as we'll go through, we'll chat more about it.
Yeah. Super interesting. And a couple other quotes that I liked from there that might overlap a little bit, but I think they're worth kind of repeating and considering. Mm-hmm. The first one was, swearing is a sociolinguistic practice that is emotionally laden, and second language users, particularly in naturalistic and in immersive contexts, are likely to acquire swear words as an unconscious in-group social strategy or as a mechanism for second language identity construction. And this one for sure I see with a lot of my students, right? Like, especially mm-hmm. trying to get into that, making that as an in-group strategy. You know, they want to make sure that they're using this language in the same way maybe that they're, in my context, and their American friends are using them, right? Or how native English speakers at different levels might be implementing these things, and if they're trying to be kind of similar to their friends, or if they're trying to present themselves in different ways. So, and then that second part about the second language identity construction, and Ishal, I know you have this experience too, is like, we're slightly different people in our other, in our second, third, and other languages, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. so the way that people perceive us is also, comes out of the way that we're using language in that in our second language, in our L2 or beyond. And so I thought that was just a really fascinating thing to consider, because we go, okay, well, what is my goal for, or what is my student's goal for trying to learn these curse words or these swear words or whatever it is, and how to use them appropriately. And then the second quote that I really liked inside of here was, speakers of English as a second language report a preference for swearing in their first language in various emotional scenarios, including high arousing emotional situations such as the time of anger or extreme pain. So when they're really highly aroused, they'll use more of their first language, which makes sense, right? I mean, I think to me, cursing in English, if I stub my toe, for example, definitely is more cathartic than cursing in Japanese, for example.
You actually curse in Japanese?
Well,
curse words.
Well, and I think this goes to the point too, yeah. because this is actually a really good point, because I never feel like my L2 bad words are that mm-hmm. bad,
like
they don't carry the strength and the power in my heart, I guess, of the curse words in my language, right? In English, in my case. And do you feel that way about your other languages that you study?
I do. I actually think that in Spanish, some of them sound awful. They're horrible. And then then I just switch, the English one's just not as bad as the Spanish one.
Uh-huh, yeah.
But I was, as I was explaining to my student the different words in Spanish, different swear words in Spanish, and I said, well, that's kind of like saying the F word, but when you use it in this context, it might mean this, and that's really bad. So never, ever say that unless you're extremely upset. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think that because it's tied to emotion and tied to what we first learned to express emotion. Right. When we were first speaking, right? So that it's got more power, more emotional power.
Yeah, but an interesting thing inside of this article too was what they did inside of this study was they showed these videos with no audio, and they kind of had students use their L1 and then English as their second language to kind of describe or maybe narrate what was going on, and they were kind of emotionally driven. But what they found was that the less emotionally driven scenes the students tended to use more curse words to describe it in English, which was their second language, than they did in their first language. So the high emotional driven ones, they use more cursing in their first language because it's more visceral for them. The lower mm-hmm. ones, they're still emotionally driven, but they're not quite as powerful. Then those ones are where people are less likely maybe to use curse words in their first language, but more likely to use them in English as their second language, which I thought was fascinating, because we might be a little bit more carefree or perhaps a little bit more loose with our language choices in our second language, right? Mm-hmm. And so we have to be aware of that when we're talking to our students as well, because they might just be throwing it out there not thinking that it's going to be as powerful or perhaps as offensive to
there's no emotional connection to the word. And I've had instances where, for example, a colleague here in Taiwan, actually, a colleague had students introduce each other, and the first question the student asked the other question in English was, "What the F is your name?" But that F thrown in the middle of the word startled my colleague. And so then he had to pause and say, wait a minute. We don't just add the word F as an adjective, or I guess what would that have been, like an intensifier?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We would probably never use it in that way unless you were a police officer interrogating someone who was refusing to give you a name or had given you a false name or something. And so again, there's no emotional connection to it, so they don't feel the power or the weight that the word might carry for the people who do speak that language as their first language.
Yeah, super interesting, right? And so the mm-hmm. student then in that case didn't really think about it, wasn't as proactively thinking about it possibly. On the other hand, and I'm not sure what that scenario was, but there's other mm-hmm. uses, right, for mm-hmm. For swearing and cursing, which is not just about trying to not necessarily negative, right? We can use them for mm-hmm. purposes of humor. We can use them for purposes, for emotional purposes. There was a second article that we also found from 2013 mm-hmm. By Horan, and it was called You Taught Me Language, and My Profit on It Is I Know How to Cursing and Swearing in Foreign Language Learning, which... well, we don't have to worry about where that title came from, I guess, right now. For those of you who are literary fellows and fellows and fellas, why did those words come out of my mouth? I'm loopy already. Okay,
it's late where Brent is.
It is late. It is late for me tonight. So, anyways. This article showed a few other points in here too, Michelle. I know that one of the this article was outstanding, actually, all the way from beginning to mm-hmm. end. And so we're going to kind of use this to guide some of our conversation. But I know that you pulled out one or two ideas from there as well.
Yeah, I think well, as we already said, you know, when we are addressing language and anything that our students are going to be using as part of their lexicon, and obviously swear words are how we express some emotions. But the article said that it is safe to say that whether a language learner chooses to swear or even avoid swearing, they should at least be aware of the patterns, context, and repercussions of swearing. And I think that this kind of, this is where the conversation comes from, and having this as an episode, is that we probably do need to cover this rather than shying away from it, because it is part of the language. And to not give the opportunity for students to learn that is robbing them of that very opportunity, that they are the ones who are going to choose to swear or not swear, but they need to understand what will come after mm-hmm. or of it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah. And so the quote that kind of tied into what I was saying before from that same article was, in addition to communicating powerful emotions using, quote, dangerous language, cursing and swearing can be communicative in another related sense. These forms of taboo language often express personality, identity, as well as humor, and should therefore feature in language learning. And so I thought, okay, that is really interesting as well, because there's so many aspects. And this mm-hmm. language is prevalent, right? Like it exists all right. over the place. And then for some reason, us as language teachers, we sit there and go, well, that's one thing that
pretend
I'm not going to
pretend
they
don't happen, or pretend we don't use it, or pretend it, we never personally ever would ever use it.
Yeah.
Lies. You're thinking it in your head.
Yeah, so there's you might think your teacher is innocent and pure, but these words exist in their lexicon, right? And so so I think it's okay to talk about these things, to share. You know, I do think that there is a time, it's worth taking the time to figure out how you're actually going to present this type of information, and really how mm-hmm. you're going, like how long you're going to spend on it. I can absolutely respect that there would be a fear around this, because if a teacher all of a sudden started saying, well, now I'm going to teach you bleep and bleep, bleep, bleep and bleep and bleep, and then a student all of a sudden has their like phone out in the corner,
like their
and
recorder.
Then, yeah, and it's uploaded to, you know, the internet, and then you're like, oh, with no context or what, you know, like there's tons yes. of potential for problems inside of there. So mm-hmm. I would say you really do want to think through that setup, but this article, that second article, the cursing and swearing in foreign language learning, had a couple of guided sections that I thought were just really interesting. So, Michelle, we'll go through these questions and these subheaders, but we'll talk through it through our own thoughts. But a couple of the sections inside of there, the first one was, why should we teach cursing and swearing? So we've gotten to a couple of these points inside of here. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to start with the first one, and then I'll have you react to
sure.
it. So the first one is, because cursing and swearing are important characteristics of emotional speech.
Gosh, freaking darn it. Yes. And that phrase doesn't quite have the emotion I wanted to convey.
Mm-hmm. No, it doesn't.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're really angry and you respond with like, oh my gosh.
Right.
It's not the same. It sounds really fake. It's not, I don't know. And I feel fake if I use that. And I know that if when I say it, it's because my nephews are around.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that matters, right? These words are tied to our emotions, and, mm-hmm. And it's not only outgoing, right? 'Cause it's incoming as well. When somebody is, for example, cursing at you, maybe there's a road rage situation, or maybe there's something else going on, right? You also want to know, I mean, you would understand by their body language, probably, you know, in a lot of these cases, but, you know, to be aware of what that language means and what somebody is saying to you is going to be important, and you're not always going to have perfect sunny days every day of your life living in an English speaking context, right?
And it could be something where you're not cursing at anyone. It could just be, oh my gosh, I know I'm aware that I'm recording live. You dropped the glass on the floor and it broke, and now you've got to clean it up, but you're in a hurry. No one's listening. But now if you suppress that emotion stays inside. So it might come out as aggression somehow later.
Absolutely.
So another reason to why we should teach cursing and swearing is because language learners are often interested in rude or dangerous language. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that that's absolutely true, right? It's one of the first things that people search out when they make friends with people. They're like, teach me the bad words, right? Like, they can just have some fun with it. And it's also, you know, it helps you.
It's in our media.
Yeah, you're kind of pushing the boundaries, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I would even say that what a more safe scenario to practice than in your English class than going outside and, you know, saying it randomly because you want to make a friend, but then actually not coming out right. Or not coming out right. And then you've actually offended someone. So I think I think it's a safe risk-taking opportunity.
Yeah. Especially if someone's like, well, maybe this will tie into the next one, but I'm also thinking about, mm-hmm. like, if you're learning from watching TV or watching movies or something, right? And let's say, for example, it's a couple of very close friends who are giving each other a hard time, right? And then they're cursing as they're giving each other a hard time. And in the context of them being very good friends, right, like that kind of rude or dangerous language is okay, but if you don't know that person and then you just come up to them and start cursing at them, then you know, like, you might think, oh, this is cool, this is the way that we bond with each other, but it's actually something you should only be doing after you've bonded with the person, right?
Right.
Okay. So next one is, because curse and swear words are versatile and culturally specific.
Yes, you don't want to translate something from your own language and then it comes out weird, or you don't want to use the wrong the wrong curse word.
Mm-hmm.
I know in other cultures, like you said, they're culturally specific, so in some cultures calling someone a dog might be the ultimate insult, whereas in English we make so many jokes about mothers. and that's just pretty insulting, and so people have got to be very aware of the context,
right? Yeah.
And the culture.
Yeah. And there's mm-hmm. a line inside of here too. I just want to kind of tag up on this section. It said, although it's important to address cursing and swearing as part of everyday spoken emotional utterances, even vulgarisms, one should not neglect the cultural and literary value of taboo language. So I thought that was, mm-hmm. that makes some sense to me as well. So it's like there is value here beyond it, right? You can take a look at understanding what's the tone of somebody saying this thing, right? How are they emphasizing their ideas? And of course, with, you know, in English, by the way, like, there's so many different ways we can take the same curse word and put it into lots of different places, and then it'll serve serve different purposes, right? Where it can be a good meaning, right? You know, like, you know, that's freaking amazing, right? And we could say that, and it can be totally positive in those senses as well, right? So so there's ways to recognize that these words are so flexible, and then that can create confusion for students as well.
So another reason why we should teach cursing and swear words is because non-native speakers should be taught how to swear properly so that you're not saying it in the wrong place. Like the student, what the F is your name, as a first question. I don't think he understood. Because like, well, people say it in movies. They say it all the time. Well, we do, but it's also specific places that we say, that we use the F word.
Yeah, yeah, there is... you know, there's context, there's register, there's all of these parts that go to
absolutely.
And then one of those things too about, you know, like as we've talked about learning from movies and learning from TV shows, right, is that they seem to reflect reality, but then of course we know that movies are not reality and TV shows are not reality, right? And so when you're talking about these dialogues, you're like, yeah, in the TV show it's there, and yes, we do say those things in those ways, but we don't necessarily cram them all in together into, you know, 30 minutes of talking, and just the same way that I have never driven my car through a you know, through a mobile building like it would seem like every American has done if you watch you know, action movies or whatever. So so we have to be, you know, we have to kind of set that up and say like, hey, let's be aware that language use in movies, even natural seeming language use, is not always actually natural, right? And so we want to be a little bit careful about those parts as well. Okay, so I like those. Those are a few interesting points inside of there. And then we're gonna shift to the next part. So what do we got?
Well, the pedagogical implications of teaching cursing and swearing. And number one, according to that article, is that cursing and swearing are taboo forms of language and therefore difficult and embarrassed to address. And of course, you know, once you start looking at the origin of those swear words, you'll notice right away that quite a lot of ours are related to religion, or they're religious based, right? And so that might be offensive, and it could often be very embarrassing to address, especially those that happen to be related to also bodily fluids and diseases, right?
Well, there's
all that is bad.
Yeah, for sure. There's all sorts of parts, right? Because that's all, a lot of the cursing comes from those, right? Or sorry, the swearing comes from that, and the cursing, I guess, technically, according to this article, the cursing is religious based, right? And so also you might have highly religious students in your class, right? And so if they're coming from a you know, like, let's say a devout Catholic background, or whatever background, religious background, and then all of a sudden you start saying, okay, today we're going to teach the GD word, right? You know, or you know, things like that. Then it's like, oh, hold on a second, because you're not only saying a bad word, you're also blaspheming, right? And and so, like, you've got all these issues that are tied up inside of there, and kind of bundled in so close that you can't really untie it, right? And so this is why I think a lot of teachers are going to shy away, because they're saying, hold on a second, all of that is just too much. Let them go figure it out on their own, and we'll just do the you know, the common stuff that we do normally, and not have to deal with it. Okay, so next part inside of here, for pedagogical implications, is there are considerable age-related, gender, regional, and ethnic variation in the use of cursing and swearing.
Man, that's a lot right there.
Clarify.
It's you know, when I talk to my students, you know, when sometimes the way, based on the curse words you're using, much like slang or idioms, I will know what generation you are, because not everybody's going to curse that way. A Generation Z is not going to be saying that. In fact, most of the words they say, I don't recognize anymore, and they don't really seem to have power. It just sounds silly, which also means I'm old, older.
Right.
But then there's, again, I don't know what else to say about this one.
Well, I think that this one's also an interesting opportunity to teach about, you know, different cultural aspects. So, for example, in America, there are some things that, you know, it's not appropriate for us to say. So if we're getting into, you know, the racism conversation and all of these things, yeah, right? I mean, that can get very dangerous very fast, right?
Oh, you know, now that you mention it, I think the hardest, or I guess most uncomfortable conversations I've had to have here with my students overseas is about race and cursing and using those words, because they have no emotional tie to the history at all. So they really don't understand what they're implying by using a word that they've heard in a rap song.
Yeah.
And I've had so many moments where I've said, let's pause and let's talk about it. And let me tell you why we are so adamant about not ever using those words. And it just seems difficult for them to grasp those concepts. But again, my students are overseas. Now, if they're going to come over to the United States, they better know, they better be able to understand the history behind it and what it implies. Mm-hmm. And I think this brings me to another, some kind of a, like a little, success story this week. I had one of my students used I would consider it a curse word, but because it's a slur. Mm-hmm. And I, at the very beginning, and I found that here there's other Asian immigrants and they don't necessarily get along with each other. So they have slurs that they call each other. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they just think it's funny. And I had to address it very head on the first day of class. And I said, if that happened in America, you'd be out of the door and you would have been in huge trouble. You may have been expelled. Mm. And so fast forward to like 10 weeks later, this week, I had a new student who happened to use a slur. And one of the students that I had the talking to, he didn't know I was listening. And he immediately said, no, that's racism, blah, 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 blah. And he explained it to him in Chinese effectively. And I was so proud of him. And I thought, oh my gosh. And so again, it's just so important for them to understand what there's history behind some of these words.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this might've been a slur, but it's still a curse word, I would say. Swearing.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Bad words, right? It's not.
Yeah, so I think, one of the things that comes up, especially for students that are coming from, so many countries are, you know, monocultural or, you know, don't have all these other things. And so
absolutely,
they really struggle, know, if we're talking about like the N-word, right? Is that, we still say the N-word to refer to it, right?
Oh, yeah.
They will hear that in the songs or in a TV show or movie or whatever else it is. And they'll say, well, people are saying this inside of here. And it's like, well, hold on a second. Like, if you're not part of that in group, then you've got a whole other, and that's a cultural thing that many students just don't even understand. They're like, what do you mean part of that in group? I'm not part of that culture. Like, it's just, that's America. And it's like, well, do Americans believe this or whatever? And it's like, hold on, let's pause on that conversation, because I often talk about this, which is like, there's no such thing as what do Americans believe, right? Any glance at the front page of any paper will tell you that, but a lot of times students don't really understand that if they're coming from a culture where it's just like, oh, we blank, right? We people from this country, and then they just kind of assume that they're all the same, and so it is a cultural.
That's a great point.
Chance to talk about that here,
and also to address, like, that's one of the things you want them to appreciate about American culture, since a lot of them will tell me, well, in America, you have all these freedoms and you're able to express yourself. And this is one of the, again, expressing yourself comes with responsibility. So it's a great chance to tackle, I guess, to the opening to tackle freedom of speech.
Yeah. Yeah. And the last one in here, again, around the pedagogical implications is, it says, cursing and swearing are manifestations of verbal violence, right? And I think this is one that we really have to be particularly aware of these days, is that is a common conversation, especially for, you know, the younger generation right now, the you know, the generation that's coming up, and Gen Z's, I guess.
Generation Z.
Yeah, as they're kind of really talking about these things and making some really powerful and excellent changes for our society, you know. So this is not a complaint about that. It's wonderful, but it also has its own set of implications. I'm like, okay, hold on a second. Let's make some adjustments as this group becomes the one that's going to be in charge and everything, right? And so they are very aware of the idea that, like, hey, so much of this language is, you know, inflicts this violence, you know, towards the language in here. Women, old people, gay people, the disabled, etc., right? And so you've got, like, these just groups that have been marginalized, you know, whatever group that is. And then we're saying, well, hold on a second. They are feeling the pain and the issues of that language as it comes across every single time, right? You know, it's like the thousands of tiny cuts, right? like that, just you slowly get used to it, but they are pain, right? And for some people. And so it's really it's another thing that you want to take into consideration. You say, well, hold on a second, we want to understand this, but the argument that they make inside of here is it kind of goes two different ways, right? But they say teaching cursing and swearing, it says some people say that we should be wary of teaching cursing and swearing because they're part of a taboo, and taboo language draws its power from transgressing socially agreed and enforced boundaries of taste and politeness, right? And then it continues to say that to teach these things, one could argue, is not only to condone the use of potentially offensive language, but also to demystify it, thus rendering it less than powerful. I'm not 100% sure I agree with all of that. Like, I think it's interesting to talk about. I'm not 100% on board with all of the idea that language is actual violence, you know. Like, I have mixed feelings about that, and I understand the argument, but I am at a mixed point for it myself. But it's a consideration to have, for sure.
You know, I wanted to just add a little bit to that, in terms that we talked at the beginning of the show how I tend not to curse in my off the podcast life. And that comes from the fact that my dad was really, really strict. We were not allowed to curse at all, ever. And I remember one time I accidentally cursed. I didn't know I was cursing as a child, and I got a big slap across the face. It was not explained to me why. And so I just knew I had said something bad, but I didn't know what it was. And then years later, therapists later, one of the therapists I had said, hey, one of the things you need to do to figure who you really are is you need to do all the things that your dad didn't allow you to do. And one of them is cursing. So I want you to curse. And then you're going to find the balance of what is the cursing level for the real Ishel, not the one that was suppressed by fear. And that is how I was able to integrate the F word into my lexicon. Because before I wouldn't. Yeah. So I do say the F word now, and I'm comfortable with it. And it's like this is kind of an example of how the word doesn't have as much power anymore.
Yeah.
Because I've balanced it. Of course, I'm not saying it every other word, every other adjective is the word or noun is the F word, but it feels effing good to be able to use that word.
I like that, though, because that is a, you know, it's like it's taking the power back to you, right? And you're controlling how much or how little you want to use it, as compared to, as compared to just being controlled, or, you know, like saying, oh, well, or this is something I have to avoid. Of it.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Right.
It's like I have to walk around this thing, which adds a different set of burdens to me. Right. And so, so I think that's a really powerful way to understand it. And then if we, you know, I'm hoping that our students don't have, you know, the emotional trauma connected with these things, but the same output is a possibility for them, which is to say, like, hey, you want to control control this. Just like any other part of language, the more you understand it, the better you can control it, the more clearly you can communicate with who you are through all of this. So I think that's super interesting. We'll have links to these articles. These are worth reading. They're really fascinating. Yeah. Kind of having, again, it's just opening your thoughts to what the possibilities are, but lots to play around with here. If you start cursing in your classes, don't blame us for it.
All right. Oh, effing Brent and Ishell.
Oh my gosh.
It is time for our fun finds. Today I have a YouTube channel that I found. As you all know, or some of you may know, I love true crime. Mm. And I've been following a pretty sad crime about this little boy who was killed by his stepmother. Oh. But the coverage is quite respectful. The host is Gisela K. She's South African and she lives in the Netherlands, and her channel is Grizzly True Crime. And so she does a pretty good job. And then the community around the cases that she covers is pretty respectful. So I know that people can very quickly start judging when they're watching true crime. And so I really like that she keeps the community in check. So if you're feeling like true crime, that's a good
respectful true crime.
Respectful true crime.
Grizzly true crime. Well, the name doesn't sound like it's going to end up being
they're
respectful.
Grizzly bears. She loves grizzly bears. And oh, that's got it. Why.
Okay. Yeah.
I know.
All right. So mine is a game. I don't know, Ishell, did I tell you that we started doing just a very small game club on campus where we're meeting every other week and just playing some games together? And it's just
And I'm jealous.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So we
love game night.
Yeah, we're doing that. Well, you and I used to do that at USC.
Yeah, USC. And that's one thing that I miss is I miss our Friday game days. Yeah. We used to just sit there and have so much fun.
Yeah. So this is for students anyways, for now, mm-hmm. but we're testing it out and trying to get a little bit of a community going with all of this. But anyways, one of the games that I bought to test this out is a game called Just One. And basically the premise is... I have a card and I face it out towards everybody else that's playing together with me, right? And then everybody else, there's a word on that card, whatever that word is. So let's just say it's banana, right? And so mm-hmm. then everybody else in the circle has a little a whiteboard of some sort, and then they'll write a single word to help me get a hint towards what that is, right? So everybody else, so let's say there's five other people, there's six of us playing total. Every other person will write a single word, but if before I can look at their words, I have to cover my eyes, and then they show the words to each other, and if anyone has repeated the same word, then they have to put the word down. So I lose that word if two or more people have chosen it, right? So let's say two people said yellow, then the word yellow disappears from my options of words that I can see for my hints. So maybe I'll get like fruit, and I'll get sweet, and I'll get long, right? And I'm like, oh, okay, right? So maybe I would guess banana on that. But that's kind of how it works. And then the cool thing about it is that it's meant to be collective. So you actually, the way that you win is that you you add up points based on how many you got right out of like 10 rounds or something like that, right? So it's a group score for everybody. For when you win it, everybody wins, right? And so it's meant to be that you're working together and you're hoping like, oh, I hope I don't think the same word as you, or maybe I got to choose something that's a little bit more obscure or something like that. And so then the students get creative with their word choices as well. And they're kind of challenged to not think of just the most obvious answer. But then sometimes nobody uses the most obvious answer. And so it becomes a really interesting game. It's very simple.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, but it becomes like really thoughtful, even though it's super simple premise. So it's called Just One. It's worth it for a party game at your house if you want it, or if you want to put it into your classroom.
Look for that.
Yeah, worth it.
Cool. All right. If you're giving us a shout out, anywhere. We're on all the social medias. Tag us. I'm not on Twitter as much these days, but we are there and we are reading just a little slowly now because I'm overseas and Brent is super busy. So we do have the Patreon. And then for the show notes and other episodes, you can check us out at diesel.org/84 mm-hmm. or listen at Voice Ed Canada. That's voiced.ca. And you can find us on Twitter, as I said.
And other places.
What the F is your handle?
Mine is at Brent G. Warner.
And mine is at ixy_pixie_pixy. In Hungarian, thank you is Kozonom. Kozonom for tuning in to the Diesel Podcast.
Thanks, everybody.
See ya.
Is it wrong to say that you should off at this point?
It'd be in context.
All right. Goodbye.